Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show and a full house in here. We got a bunch of people in studio. It's a real pleasure to have Christopher Rodriguez and Lawrence Juber here. We're going to be talking about the Los Angeles Unified School District music program. And briefly, I met Christopher through Jessica Barron from Guitars in the Classroom. And Guitars in the Classroom has been heavily involved with Christopher and the school district. And we're going to take a look at that and a little bit also of after the fact of how the program's been integrated with the teachers trained to do that. We have also with us Monique Brusca, one of the teachers here, and a couple of her students, Ashley Martinez and Aiden Pacheco. And of course, Lawrence will talk a little more about that. And we got I think it's a world premiere of this piece that you arranged for them. I think that is, if I'm correct, it's never been heard.
Yes, that's true.
So we got a world premiere here, so it should be pretty good. Anyway, I just want to thank Jessica for introducing me to all these people and the programs that we're talking about tonight. I can't stress how important and vital they are in terms of bringing the arts, making the arts available to everybody. And these kids are great in what they're doing and what the teachers are doing. Anyway, I want to welcome Chris. Great to have you here.
Hi, Jeff. Thank you. I wish people could see all the people that are in the studio, and it's pretty exciting because we're gonna
I'm taking everybody. Pictures. I'll post these.
Very cool. We're gonna hear everybody contribute, and I wanna thank you for having all of us here, and I will just go in and tell people the really cool story about how we met and where we are right now with this program.
Before you start. He's hiding behind the camera, so I totally forgot him. Dr. David Allen's here, who he did a show with me about repetitive stress injuries, and he's here too, joining us, and I want to welcome. He's videoing, so here he is. He's waving at his camera. But anyway, I'm going to make sure I got everybody.
I'm going to be sure to refer to him, especially when Lawrence starts to share about his own experiences. They were already having a good conversation concerning those sorts of challenges. Well, you know, Jessica Barron and I met via an email she sent me in like December of 2014, and I think I got back to her by 2015. And both of us figured out that we'd been busy doing other things, and we hit it off immediately. And it reminds me of a couple organizations that come and reach out to LA Unified. There are certain people that come and they alter the course of a career or a practice or, you know, the way people deliver instruction. And they do it forever, and they do it in an incredibly positive way, and Jessica's one of those people. And we started getting together with the elementary program. So in short, my position with LAUSD is K-12 music advisor, mm-hmm. which sounds really important. But there used to be six of me, and now there's one due to budget and everything. But the short story is I've been very fortunate to get this job. It's been a pleasure and a privilege. I service about 400 of LAUSD's 535 elementary schools by supporting and co-managing the program of the elementary music teachers that go and visit all these people, all these kids and teachers. And we have, in general, somewhere around 1,300 schools mm-hmm. in LA Unified. Mm-hmm. And I do my best to support and communicate with the secondary teachers as well. Mm-hmm. But my primary focus is the elementary program. And being one person with 400 to 500 schools, that's about what we do in terms of managing the delivery of instruction at the elementary level. Well, Jessica has this incredible curriculum that is from her own genius, quite frankly. And I was very fortunate one day to have her come in and share with all the elementary teachers her method, her philosophy, and her vast and rich curriculum concerning not only general music, but this idea of arts integration, a strategy where music teachers can teach standards-based music in a deep fashion and yet incorporate or integrate the other disciplines at a school site. So the English language arts, mathematics, social studies, especially for Jessica's work, phonemic awareness for little kids. Getting kids to sing sounds and words, getting kids to sing sounds and words on pitch. But then Jessica starts teaching people how to play the ukulele or how to tune the ukulele so a child can learn how to eventually accompany himself or herself, or the teacher accompanies the class. And that's the tip of the iceberg. I could spend the next 3 hours on that.
That's powerful stuff in itself for them to be able to play.
For what the thing about Jessica, and then this is where Lawrence comes in, the thing about Jessica is that her method ensnares music teachers, non-music teachers, kids who will not be musicians, kids who are destined to be musicians. I mean, this is something for everybody, and it enriches a community. One thing that she did for me was asked to visit my closing meeting that I do at the end of the year with all the teachers and with my colleagues in the arts education branch, my office. And she said, you know, my friend Lawrence Juber's got to catch a plane around 10 a.m. or 11 a.m. Can he come by around 9 and meet your teachers and play for them? And, you know, it took me about a half second to say, yes, please, yes, please. And Lawrence, as has been played out over and over, was so gracious and willing to share some wonderful stories, not only about his own career, but to discuss his own ideas about guitar. And like Jessica, on this day a couple years ago, a June day, Lawrence came down and talked to our music teachers and some of our other dance and visual arts and theaters teachers. But, you know, he talked to them like professionals, and he shared stories with them, and he related to them. And then he went and just played some wicked guitar. He's got an arrangement of Runaway that I keep begging him to play every time I see him with a group of teachers. And, you know, that's how the relationship started, because not only was his wonderful playing captivating all these very fine musicians and these great listeners, but his mannerism and Jessica's vision, the two of them together, it was just something that I had not seen when I was in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes back to this idea of guitar. I think everyone in this room, but even people who are listening, would just say the guitar, the footprint of the guitar on the American psyche is massive. And so it would follow that it's also it also takes a place alongside the orchestral and choral programs and the jazz programs, yeah, and the mariachi programs that are all over our city and need to be increased. So to have someone who studied classical guitar, University of London, and then started playing on a rock and roll TV show in London, and then started playing with Paul McCartney, for him to bring all that experience in and share with the teachers, the effect was just, it was substantial. And it was something that mm-hmm. made working with him so much fun and easy. So Lawrence eventually came over to do professional development for our secondary teachers now, high school and middle school. And, you know, unbidden, he said to me one day, by the way, I do this pro bono, so let's just not waste time with money and et cetera. And he came in and, again, blew people away. And with teachers who were learning how to play guitar because of the demands of the kids, yeah, orchestra's cool, we want to play guitar. And then we also had guitar teachers who had these expert-level programs. And he started to work with all of them, share the history of guitar, share the different styles of playing. He could also tell you how he started doing alternative guitar masters. It wasn't just Segovia anymore. Mm-hmm. It was mm-hmm. these other neglected people from the time of Segovia. Mm-hmm. And it all came together in these two meetings. And, you know, without us doing anything, teachers started approaching him. And he got a chance to start working with Didi Bakari from Marshall High School, who's got a great orchestral/mandolin program that I think we should share about later today. And then at one point, we started looking to expand, and the lady next to me right here, Monique Bruska, her name kept coming up with other outside arts organizations. Monique from Columbus, man, she just, anytime you ask her to do something, she does it. She does it really well. We really like working with her. Have you worked with Monique, Chris? Blah, 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 blah. Hey, Lawrence, I have an idea. Let's call up Monique from Columbus Middle School. Lawrence went over there, and I wasn't even there. I didn't even broker that meeting in person. I just put the emails together, and one thing led to another, and it's just another solid partnership.
Mm-hmm.
Great examples. We have our music teachers in LA Unified are expert musicians, first and foremost. When they perform for other people, those people are blown away. And then many times, like with Monique, they are professionals in their craft, and you mm-hmm. get a chance to put someone like Lawrence together with someone like Monique, and then you get out of the way. And that's basically where we are right now.
Can you give an idea of the expansiveness of the program? How many schools are you talking about in the district so people get an idea? Because it's a pretty big district, isn't
it?
Well,
we're the second largest in the country. We're way behind New York, but we're way ahead of Chicago, Miami, that tier. Geographically, we're the largest by a million miles, almost literally.
Mm-hmm.
I tell people we go from Gidget to Roy Rogers, if you're thinking about the history of cinema, from the beach up to the cactus.
Right.
Or, you know, from San Pedro to Sylmar. And there's times where I've had to drive down to Narbonne High School near San Pedro and then turn around and come all the way up past North Hollywood up towards Sylmar one day mm-hmm. to work. The amount of miles one puts on a car just taking care of business like that is incredible. So we are about 1,300 schools right now.
Wow.
Around 535 elementary schools. Not as many secondary schools, but then with adult education, with what we call SPAN schools, which might go grades 6 through 12 or grades mm-hmm. K through 8, and all these different specialized schools, there's a big push for individual choice at the local district and at the school site. So a lot of the traditional school models that you and I grew up with are modified.
Right.
And so then when you catalog them or try to tabulate them, you have to come up with a lot of new categories. With guitar, I think I would say there might be 125 class periods of guitar in the district. But then you have to think about the guitar clubs that are out there. And the guitar clubs are more important in some ways, in that they probably go grades 2 through 12, right?
What do you mean by guitar club? Is that after school activity?
Or before school, or at lunch, or, you know, we'll have maybe some English language arts teachers or social studies teachers, and guitar will be a big component of one of their classes.
Oh, very
maybe
cool.
Kids will start doing projects that are based in a musical performance or a musical form, or an elementary teacher, especially maybe the upper grades, 4th, 5th, 6th grade. You know, they might not have orchestra there. And that those are the grades that we service with our orchestral program. So you'll have those people pulling out the guitar every once in a while. So
mm-hmm.
the kids, and then more importantly, our credentialed general music/choral teachers in the elementary level. As a result of Jessica's work, they're starting to purchase ukuleles, guitars, you know, and Little Kids Rock is another partner organization that has really had a big influence on the way people approach music in our district, because we really try to support those traditional venues because of the obvious benefits of music instruction. But if a school doesn't have that capability, if a school doesn't have an orchestral program, then they're able to use guitar and drums and bass and keyboards and rock and roll singing as a way to get the kids to touch base with that part of themselves.
Now, your program is not just guitar. You do all instruments, all orchestra and band instruments besides, and then you know, keyboards, bass drums,
right.
Percussion.
So in the case of like Monique's school, at the secondary schools, they're almost semi-autonomous city-states. Each principal and each staff gets to put together the kind of instructional program that they want at their school or what has traditionally been at their school. It's really amazing, like, for instance, to have Monique have the program that she does, because middle schools or junior high schools aren't required to have an art requirement for high school graduation. So for her to have art or music at her school is really the result of her own hard work and, in her case, a principal that she really is grateful for having around for the support. And she can talk to you about the way a middle school program runs operationally. With me, I manage 11,000 orchestral instruments for kids.
Mm-hmm.
We house them in a warehouse, we service them downtown, and we ship them out through our trucking operations. And then I also work with about 65 elementary teachers who study direct choirs or general music classes with a lot of the ORF xylophones you may be familiar with, those
mm-hmm.
big, beautiful wooden xylophones that kids can beat the heck out of. And that's where my program and my own job description gets super focused, is on managing and supporting that kind of instruction. In the case of Monique, it's the kind of secondary professional development meetings where Lawrence met our teachers, or she might email me and ask me about projects, events, is there resources. I'm sort of a quasi-consultant when it comes to the secondary folks. It wasn't always that way, but we do what we can with the state of a budget being the way it often is these days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's the amazing thing, because we, at least what I've seen, not necessarily the LA school district, but in general in the country, the arts have kind of been taking the back seat with all the budgets and stuff. It seems that in terms of the money in government, it's not a big deal, and it should be.
I know. I love seeing commercials with bankers or captains of industry or world leaders talk about how they want the people that work for them to think like artists. And I just want to yell back at the TV and say, stop doing that. Why don't you just pay your artists like you pay your bankers,
right.
your captains of industry, and your world leaders? Maybe we'd have more art by then, you know?
Yeah. But I mean, I think that's really important. And Monique, I think that's vital, what you're doing, because they're the new blood. They're the new people, you know, that are going to give us new and exciting music, all the arts, the visual arts, all of it. And to me, that's a big deal. As I've gotten older, that's become more of an important part, you know, because, you know, we're only here so many days, but you got to pass it on.
I'll bet you Monique finds kids in her classes that are incredibly creative in avenues other than music. But
mm-hmm.
music might be the place they can go at Columbus Middle School.
Right,
or
right.
In her part of the valley. And so she's there for that kid's creative urges. Do you want to tell people what it's like to be that solo movement for all those kids who are looking for something to do and somewhere to go?
That's one of the reasons I started guitar at Columbus mm-hmm. about 17 years ago. It was another avenue for kids who did not want to be in the band, did not want to play violin, and I was a guitar player as well, so I wanted to bring that into it, and got in touch with Little Kids Rock about 5 years ago, and they taught a different way, not just guitar orchestra, but bringing the kids' music into it so that they are familiar with not just the Beatles and Elvis and the Doors, but the Lumineers or U2, and these are the things that the kids are listening to, and they're all the same.
Mm-hmm.
So I incorporate that in the classroom, and it's because I have other classes I teach. I have a band, I have an orchestra, And I have beginners, sixth graders as well, that are learning violin, cello. But this class that I have is modern band, is the rock band class. And the students, they learn a lot of chords, try to work on scales, finger dexterity, all of the things that we can do in just 1 year.
Listening to each other.
Yes, definitely.
Well, listening is the key.
Rhythm.
It's the key.
Rhythm is very important, too. They have to have the rhythm to play.
It's, you know, just Everlong, the Foo Fighters song. I mean, there are thousands and thousands of kids that have come through LA guitar programs where drop D and major sevens are not a foreign language to them. You know, just even something like that expands a kid's.
Well, the other day I was talking to somebody, a younger kid, late teens, and exposed him to funk. You know, the groove of the funk group, like Tower Power or, you know, something like that. Or even, you know, most of them have heard like Earth, Wind & Fire. But some of that more street funk where it's just it's a great groove.
We did that. I Want You Back.
Oh, very cool.
By the Jackson 5. We did try to do that. So I try to expose the kids to a lot of different music, not just what you would expect from a classic rock station. It's very important for them to know it all.
It's important to know that a lot of the LAUSD music teachers, when they go to something like what Monique referred to as modern band, or they do a guitar-based music program, they're really trying to expand what they can offer kids and embrace everything that might get a kid hooked on music.
Right.
You know, if playing a Red Hot Chili Peppers song gets a kid into the Bach Lute Suites, fantastic. If it doesn't, fantastic. But what's really important is that the teacher embraces the possibility, and then a child can embrace the possibility. Because as you and I know, I mean, all of us here are aware, and maybe people outside of LA don't know, besides USC and UCLA turning this into a crazy football town for at least half a year, there's also these music schools there. And man, I mean, they don't mess around there. And so if a child can find his way or her way into one of those schools or one of the other great schools around here, CSUN, Cal State Long Beach, Cal State LA.
Cal State Fullerton has a good
music.
Exactly. And then there's Musicians Institute, which we've
heard of.
So there's specialty schools, too.
Yeah. Cal Arts,
but,
too.
That's right.
Yes, Cal Arts, definitely.
One of the forward-thinking ones for kids who really want that.
Quick question, Monique, just so people understand the breadth of your knowledge, is give us a little background on you in terms of what was your major and what did you study, and or are you just a rocker?
No.
I'm just kidding.
Actually, I wanted to do that. My dad wouldn't let me. He said, if you want to learn guitar, which I learned how to play when I was 8, playing my dad's old Beatles book. He showed me some chords.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was 14, I wanted to be a rocker like everybody else. He said, no, you have to learn classical guitar. So I did. Carcassi was what I had to do. And Kenton Youngstrom, who I don't think he teaches at the Colburn School of Music anymore, but that's where I learned to play.
So guitar was your main instrument?
Actually, clarinet was my main instrument. Ah, yeah, I also played the piano. So, because I come from a music family. My dad, all
brothers.
You
play in band and stuff like that?
I did.
That? I'm trying to get a feel of your background in terms of so you were familiar with ensemble playing. And
oh, yeah. Yeah, playing clarinet. Guitar, I did only solo. And then when I went to UCLA, I stopped the guitar and focused on the clarinet.
Oh, okay. So you majored in clarinet.
I did.
That was your...
Yeah. And music education.
Did you ever kind of moonlight on a little rock band here and there?
No. Like he said, it's UCLA. They're not kidding around with music.
Now, back when I was in school, I remember Lee Ritenour used to hide the fact that he was doing sessions. They would have kicked him out in school. He had to hide it. It was that they were like that. You had to just focus on the instrument. That's it. They wouldn't let you do anything else.
Lawrence has a really interesting story about figured bass exercises at the university. And
well, yeah, when I was at London University, I lobbied to be able to do my figured bass exams on guitar, which they wouldn't let me do. It had to be done on keyboard, and so and I'm a terrible piano player. So I could read it. I was just slow and not great technique. The year after I left, they allowed guitar.
They allowed.
but it was very much part of my what I had to deal with was the fact that I was fascinated by music. You know, so I'm in high school, I'm starting to learn music theory, but needing to do classical guitar in order to get grade 6 in order to be able to go further with it. But I was gigging also. I mean, I was playing in top 40 bands and playing weddings and all kinds of stuff and whatever. You know, I wanted to be a studio musician, so I just was looking to be versatile. But the path was really, I had to determine my own path because there was no outlet. There was no place I could go to that encompassed what you can do now with, let's say, Musicians Institute or USC with the,
right, they didn't
with
have,
the studio guitar with jazz and all of that. And that it was really just finding my own way with it. And I still, what I've discovered in this whole process is that there's this tremendous gray area between the kind of the classical guitar pedagogy on one side and then the rock band side of it on the other. And then because the guitar world is so balkanized and the jazz players don't talk to the classical players, don't talk to the rock players, unlike in percussion where you have the Percussive Arts Society where, you know, they all rub shoulders together.
Right, right.
The guitar world doesn't work that way. And it just, for me, it was just this long process of kind of finding my own way and now looking at the scenario where you have the strict pedagogy on one side, you have repertoire, like rock band driven repertoire, but where's the connection between the harmonic content, for example, and the music theory content? And that's true on the classical side too. I have a friend in Germany, Peter Busch, who's a very famous guitar teacher there, as well as having played in rock bands. And he currently is taking students that have graduated from 4-year conservatory classical guitar courses and teaching them how to play chords, how to play primary chords, how to develop some improvisational skills so that they can teach music, not just the mechanics of classical guitar.
Well, it's interesting because I had on the show previously Ron Eshte, who taught at Guitar Institute. He's one of the best jazz players. And we started talking about arranging. And my background at SC was classical arranging for, you know, orchestration, the traditional stuff. And it was interesting what he was talking about because it's the same thing. He just said it in a different perspective. Mm-hmm. But basically, all the principles are the same. And I think what I've seen now, like at SC and UCLA now, I think those barriers are starting to come down. You're starting to see more integration. I've had players come on here that are flamenco players that play jazz, that they're all, their roots were rock because they grew up on it. So you're getting this mixture of styles. And it's, to me, that's important. But it's interesting because of your background, all the arranging, what you did in school, it's interesting how it affected, well, it affected your playing, but also, too, in your arranging and doing parts, including what you're doing with the kids.
See, musical substance, the stuff of music, transcends style.
Mm-hmm.
But music is taught through style. It's taught via style. So you learn classical music or romantic music. You know, we divide it up into these periods. Then, of course, you hit the 20th century and everything kind of goes off in multiple directions. But the reality is, I mean, I play fingerstyle guitar professionally. You know, that's my artistic direction. You go back to the early 19th century, and the players that we look at as the founding fathers of classical guitar, Giuliani and Saw, Carcassi, Carulli, Aguado, they were not classical musicians. They were musicians of their era. They, you know, wrote their own music. They arranged pop music. You know, most pop music was opera in that period. And you know, you go a little later in the century to Mertz, Johann Caspar Mertz, who published an enormous collection of arrangements of opera music. Also, you know, tone poems that are pre-impressionistic and very Schumann-esque in the way that he was writing for the instrument. But they weren't classical. They were musicians of their time who knew how to improvise. They understood harmony, saw stressed harmony. He had to learn harmony in his method.
Right.
it was a very different era. I think what the blessing and the curse of what Segovia brought to the guitar was that he brought the gravitas so that the instrument could exist in the classical concert hall, the high art concert right. hall. But he also brought a very narrow focus to it, a very Hispanic focus, for one thing, because predominantly the music that he was playing was written by Spanish or South yeah. American composers, with a few exceptions of Bach and pretty much ignored all the Northern European 19th century repertoire. And a lot of it, I think, he wasn't even aware of because it just disappeared.
Right.
And then the internet kind of allowed it to come back.
Yeah.
And you have players, I mean, you talk about crossing genres. Pavel Steidl, who's the top classical guitarist in the Czech Republic, is brilliant at playing early Romantic music. So he does concerts with Paganini and Legnani stuff on mm-hmm. reproduction authentic instruments. But he started off as a bluegrass player.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, it's interesting that point, because even farther, not necessarily with guitar, but like Mozart, he played pop music. That's what yeah. he did. He was like, you know, he did all these virtuoso things, but that was all show stuff.
Right.
And it became legend and became this real sophisticated, but it was really popular music.
So we tend to experience historic music like that with a very narrow focus. I mean, the fact, you know, you go see a Baroque concert and there'll be a harpsichordist mm-hmm. doing continuo, but you look at the literature of the time and one continuo player for each six string players. So authentically, two or three keyboards, lutes, theorbos, maybe guitars. They had a rhythm section in the Baroque era. We don't use that rhythm section now.
Yeah,
they improvised. You know, the guitar players were expected to improvise preludes. That was how you established the key, and they were clever about the way they played with the key. You know, but they were expected to improvise. They were. These are skills that have been lost, but we have them in rock and roll. We have them in jazz. So what I look at is that area between all the styles that would transcend the styles to just be able to say, this is music. These are musical devices, musical experiences. How do we integrate all of this stuff?
Mm-hmm.
But of course, you have to go to the very beginning and actually get kids attached to the instrument. And,
right.
and the fact is that the guitar is portable, it's affordable, and it's capable of a complete musical statement.
Right. It can be used as a solo instrument, can be used as accompaniment. It can fully orchestrate. You can do both.
Yes.
So in terms of that type of versatility.
And you can strap it on your back. And you do that with a piano, you'll be in trouble.
Right.
Yeah. that hurts.
It's interesting, too, because the kind of versatility that we are saying is inherent in music and was there at the beginning. And, you know, for instance, at the birth of opera in Italy around 1600, the singers were actually just called actors, right?
Right.
There wasn't an actor and a singer. The orchestra was those five guys in the pit band, essentially, and things developed. And now in the LAUSD music classroom, all of that versatility has actually come back in to the teacher. I mean, Monique's...
Mm-hmm.
Any other discipline, her credentials would mark her as highly qualified. I mean, here you are, a music teacher, clarinet, piano, guitar, band, solo guitar. I mean, this is a highly qualified professional. I'm proud to say it's typical of the LAUSD music teacher.
That's important. That's important because it gives
great
you
music teachers.
The breadth of your knowledge is invaluable, and also yours. Your musicology alone, that's
I call it guitarology.
Guitarology. I mean, it's great. I mean, he knows the stuff.
That whole era. Of
but you know, Chris was instrumental in that because it was after I had done the presentation for the elementary school teachers for the school district, and Chris and I started talking, and it really helped me focus on filling in the gaps in my own understanding of the history of the instrument. And that actually got fused with the work that I've been doing with a man named Dick Boak, who's the archivist for Martin Guitars.
Yes.
And it evolved into his slideshow, and my research kind of morphed into something that we've been doing, is we call Guitar Mania to Beatlemania. Mm-hmm. Basically the history of the guitar. And the fact that Martin Guitars is really an intrinsic part of the history of the American guitar, because what C.F. Martin did was he brought the Viennese style of guitar over to America, right, infused it with the Spanish style, and created a uniquely American instrument.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of American music from the turn of the century to now, the Martin guitar was in, especially in recording.
Way earlier than that. I mean, really, mid-19th century.
Yeah, no, the Martin Guitar Company has been for years. I mean, just many. But it's important. That sound was a critical part of it, and how he developed the guitars, that consistency of sound, to me, still blows me away today.
And how much the guitar in that era was in the house, in the homes. I mean, if you didn't have a piano in the parlor, you had a guitar hanging
guitars
on the wall.
Yeah.
And lest we forget the democratizing power of music and the guitar itself, per Lawrence's idea of it being portable and affordable for the common person, in the 19th century, your guitar virtuoso was not a blonde-haired, blue-eyed, you know, detached, aloof, right, traveling virtuoso. It was a working musician of color more often than not.
I've seen the barriers of culture, sex, religion broken down to the commonality of music. I've seen it personally, where people of all faith, creed, color, whatever, playing together in the common ground. I mean, that's a powerful thing, because that's a universal, global thing, music.
And we have people, practitioners of that, what you just described, that movement. The music teacher, the public school music teacher, is a practitioner of that.
Mm-hmm.
Every day they suit up and show up, and they put that out there for their kids to accept. And we probably could remind the audience too that we have a couple kids here who are working with Monique in that way. And even tonight, what we're going to hear is a song. No pressure, guys. I'm not trying to get you on the air right now, but. You know,
well, actually, let them play, because we're almost out of time.
Yeah.
But I want to ask, before we have them play, set it up for us, if Monique can kind of set up this piece and what they're doing, and also where they're at musically and in the program. How do they fit in the program? Where are they more advanced? Are they beginning? Or, you know, give me an idea where they're.
Okay. They are actually my two advanced players in the class. Both of them wanted to continue with the modern band program. They started in seventh grade. They're both eighth grade now.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have their progression from when they started last year, mm-hmm, in seventh grade to now is amazing, how much they've gotten listening when the person is changing, learning the chords. The song that they're doing, Can't Help Falling in Love, was something that one of them, Ashley, who's here, her group wanted to play for a concert we did in March,
mm-hmm,
partly because the 21 Pilots, hmm, right? They did the song, and they knew it was Elvis because I explained that it was that. But they wanted to do it, and Lawrence came along, and we talked about it, and he said, "I'll do an arrangement for you," and I thought that would be great. He pretty much the 2 days later, there was the arrangement, and it's a beautiful arrangement of it. So. They're actually, Adon is not in her particular group. He's in a different group. I have the kids in groups, and they create their own little rock band group, and they choose songs. So we had a concert, actually, on Saturday, and so these two have been practicing today to play this song for
you guys.
Well,
it's good, because Adon is now his first step into session work.
Right. Yeah.
Walking in. This is what it's all about. Sitting in, yeah, CD your pants, read it, and do it. No. But real quickly, both of you, Ashley and Adon, so you've been playing, what, a couple of years or more than that? Did you play before you took your Monique's class?
No, I started in seventh grade.
Started in seventh grade, you too?
I also started in seventh grade.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's very cool. And real quick, what do you like to listen to? I want to know what your music preference is.
My taste in music, I like alternative rock. I actually like everything Miss Prisco likes, because in the beginning, I didn't know what type of music I liked till I came into Ms. Broska's class, and like she started introducing us into these type of musics, and then like I started liking that type of music.
Don, what do you like?
To be honest, I like any type of music.
No favorite?
No favorite. Like, I like anything that Ms. Broska listens to and I listen to. Like alternative rock or classical. I like anything, really. Except heavy metal rock, sorry.
You're not a heavy metal guy.
Oh, darn.
Okay, well, that's cool. That's all right. That's all right. You'll have to show them Humble Pie. That's not heavy metal, but get them into the blues. I'm just kidding. Anyway, let's go ahead and let's hear them play the song. That's amazing. That's great stuff. And that's a beautiful arrangement.
Oh, thanks.
Very nice. Cool. Very, very cool. We're almost out of time. Let's go ahead, because what I'll do to take us out is I'm going to play the whole Bach piece to take us out so everybody can hear this amazing arrangement. And I want you to set that up. But before we do that, let's get all the info out. I already mentioned www.guitarsintheclassroom.org.
Fantastic.
And if I'm correct, your website, I put achieve.lausd.net?
/arts.
/arts, okay. All right, very cool. And, of course, lawrencejuber.com.
Yes.
Very cool stuff. I had the honor of hearing him play at the Fret House last weekend, and it's amazing stuff. And as I said, I was blown away with Don't Get Fooled Again. He did an arrangement for that for solo guitar that's just mind-blowing. So very, very, very cool. Anyway, I want to mention about Dr. David Allen, rocketshipwellness.com. If you have any problems, any type of injuries and anything like that, he's helped me with my hands. And it's amazing what he knows. His knowledge is pretty vast.
I just, I'm very happy to see the programs being introduced to the school system. And what I want to do is not what we play is, but how we play it. And so getting the kids, what I would like to do is getting the kids to really focus in mentally and physically on themselves and how they're achieving a better, relaxed way of playing to enhance their whole life.
Right.
If our programs expand, his work has to be a part of it.
I agree.
Well, you know yourself, when you practice in New Woodshed, you're playing hours. I used to play 5-6 mm-hmm. hours a day, I'm sure you did too.
Yeah.
That's a lot on your hands, and if you're not doing it right, it can really stress more than you think. And now, we were talking about this before the show. Back then, we didn't have all the computers and the texting and all that stuff. But now, after you finish practicing and playing, you're on your computers, you're on your phones, you're using those fingers all the time. So you're using them a lot more than we did as a kid. So that's important. That's very, very important. So anyway, before I want Lawrence to talk a little bit about this piece, but because we're going to go out with that, I just want to thank you, Chris, Monique, Ashley, Aiden. You guys are awesome. Dr. Dave and Lawrence.
Thanks,
and obviously, you need to come back. We need to do more of this. This is very important, and we just scratched the surface. I think that this warrants another show. So I hope we'll have all you guys back in.
Sign me up.
And we might just get Monique to play bass.
Uh-oh.
No pressure. I saw that picture of her playing bass. I'm like, I got to hear that. That's pretty cool. But anyway, before we go out, just briefly set up this piece that was done by the Marshall High School.
Well, Didi Pekari, who's the music teacher at Marshall High, I had met her through Chris,
mm-hmm.
and I went and did a classroom presentation for her and realized that she had an enormous amount of talent and resources at the school, and she was talking about doing a mandolin orchestra,
mm-hmm.
mostly because she was getting tired of the violin players playing out of tune. So she figured give them frets, and they'll be playing in tune. So it took a while because they had to source some mandolas and then figured out how to turn bouzoukis into mandocellos, and you know, so to get the range of it. And I said, you know, you've got all these guitar players. Let's create a continuo section. So that, you know, one of the things I did for her was I took a Vivaldi mandolin concerto that they were doing, and I derived a chord chart from the arrangement, and so they could, you know, have the kids playing chords. But then while I was doing that, I figured that, you know, it'd be kind of cool to do some Bach. And I took the Bach E minor Bourée from mm-hmm. the first lute suite and arranged it for the mandolin orchestra with a chord chart, so that you have the mandolins plus the guitars to create, you know, an orchestral sound which is not an orchestra, but is its own kind of orchestra.
Well, it gets a kind of an orchestra when you have that many strings. The sympathetic,
it becomes orchestral. But and you go back to the early 20th century, and mandolin orchestras were extremely common in America. I mean, not only as a marketing mm-hmm. tool for Gibson, who, you know, were very big in that area, but it was actually, I mean, considered to be essential curriculum. The kids were expected to play in these kinds of orchestras because of the discipline and just everything that it does mm-hmm. to promote an artistic sensibility.
Now, this piece, what's the... It's mandolins, guitars?
It's mandolin, mandolas, mandocellos, which are really bouzoukis that have been adapted, and a bunch of guitars. And I think even the bass stuff is basically being done on guitars, too.
Okay. No bass, traditional bass.
No electric bass. There is drums on it because and some electric guitar too, because part of the arrangement, if we actually get to it, is it breaks down into kind of more of a jazz groove. I wrote in some soloing over the changes because they have some very capable lead guitar players there.
Oh, very cool.
So really trying to bridge the gap between the Baroque and the rock side of things. And then when it comes back at the end, they actually stay in swing.
Oh, okay. I'm going to take us out with the whole piece. So we'll play the whole thing. And thank you for sharing that with us, too.
You're welcome.
Thank you, guys. And also, too, she couldn't be here tonight, but I can't thank Jessica Berry enough for introducing me to you guys and just everything that she is and what she represents. She's an amazing lady.
Ditto.
So, everybody, we're going to listen to this beautiful Bach Bourée and E minor. And everybody have a great week. Ashley Aiden, thank you so much for coming on. I hope you can come and hang with us again. You're always welcome to come down here and visit us crazy guitar people and see all the sorts. We're into gadgets and stuff. But everybody, have a great week. We will see you next week. Here's the Bach, the Marshall Mandorchestra.
Yeah.